I'm so happy and really full of joy, and I'm excited that I'm able to welcome you, Niklas Jani, to the Conscious Evolution Summit today.
It's great to be here, Pooria. Thank you for inviting me.
I'm really so happy. I know that you just came back from a long journey, and I really appreciate that you are available for this field of evolving in consciousness and to grow as a human community. And so it's really an honor for me, and I don't take it for granted, because I guess there are many, many opportunities where you can share and engage. Yeah.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Yeah. It worked out well, actually, because I just came back from America. Mm-hmm. And good.
Yeah. And Niklas, I mean, just a very short introduction, but you have really experienced since more than 40 years where you help individuals and teams to really, as you say, reach their highest level of presence, of coherence, and of service. You also teach in a great business school in Lausanne, and you share your knowledge really all over the globe. And today I would like to focus with you on the topic of trauma, and especially of generational trauma and collective trauma, because in my opinion, we really need to address it and look at it. Because when we think of trauma, I mean, I'm not really an expert in it, but what I guess is that it holds a certain density and contraction. And when we think of we evolving and expanding, that's the really opposite movement. So, So I'm really curious from you to hear, because you work also with a lot of groups and you have experience in this topic.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, I do a lot of one-to-one work, and I do a lot of group work. And it's very interesting hearing how you spoke about trauma, because I very much agree with much of what you said. And then I would like to reframe the last part of what you said, interestingly. So, I mean, I think it's good to, I like to, I mean, in a way, the more I work and the more years I work, on the one hand, the deeper it gets. And on the other hand, some things, core things, become simple. But it's a simplicity that, you know, is the result of many years. And so let's start with trauma, because, of course, there are clinical definitions of trauma, very precise clinical definitions of trauma. But I'm not a clinician in that sense. And I think it's very helpful to understand trauma in one essential way, which is that trauma is energy that could not be processed. And this applies to individuals, to groups, to cultures, to countries. Energy that could not be processed, meaning that things happened that were of an energetic intensity that our system, individual or group, had to regulate that energy. It had to close that energy. And then, as you very correctly said, we, individual or group, move forward, but with a whole part of the energy system of who we are frozen, more or less frozen. So that's, I think, very helpful just to understand trauma in that way. Because once we understand trauma in that way, the work I've been doing many, many years, and also in the last 5 years of study, learned to do in a kind of even more precise way, is that we gain access to that energy, not intellectually, but really directly, because then there can be movement. And the only, I think it was very interesting, like I said, the last part of what you said, because on the one hand, it's true what you said, that that is exactly the opposite of evolution. On the other hand, I think it's good to have the perspective that actually it's exactly by working with that that evolution occurs. And not only that, because if we look at evolution in the deepest sense, and I'm going to speak a bit metaphysically now, that the light needs to come right down into matter. And it's true that where there is trauma, it's like there is the densest substance. However, once we can work really with that substance, it's like then what we might call the light can come even deeper into matter, meaning that actually it's the gateway, it's not an obstacle to evolution. If we work with it in the way I'm proposing, it actually becomes the process of evolution. Mm. And I think it's very interesting. I even you helped me to even say that.
Yes, and I'm really happy for this precise clarification. But I deeply relate to it, and there is nothing wrong with it, and also with this, as you said, this that kind of we weren't able to process the energy.
Yes.
The time that's a very healthy, a healthy way of kind of protecting us in that moment.
Totally. So
nothing wrong, but when maybe the light comes and we feel certain tension or something is uncomfortable, or we just experience that we can't really or aren't able to let the light really deep in, maybe there is a moment to look at it more deeply and more
exactly
closely.
Exactly. It's not only healthy, it's actually remarkably intelligent function within the human being. I mean, I'm sure like you, when you hear what some of the things people went through in their life, and you understand that they're functioning often very well in their life, you think, wow, that's unbelievable that their system found how to go forward.
Mm.
It's a deep intelligence. And in the deeper way, again, I still, because it's a radical reframe, because a lot of the time we speak about obstacles, like we talk about parts of ourselves that are somehow obstacles to our development. And in a bigger picture, and this is again something I'm learning more and more, because it is such a reframe that nothing is an obstacle, it's the way. To give a very simple example, and this is relevant, I think it's an easy thing to understand in a way. Like when I'm working with a group of business people, I will often say, okay, how many of you in this room believe that fear blocks you, that somehow fear is an obstacle to moving forward? Virtually every single person puts their hand up, but it's actually totally untrue. What blocks us is that we block fear. We don't want to feel fear. Because the moment an individual or a group feels safe enough to really allow fear, even terror, this happened in a group recently in New York, and can really allow the whole feeling in the body, not only is it not an obstacle, it opens a huge amount of energy. So that fear that we would normally say, oh, if I could get rid of my fear, then I would move forward. No, it's the opposite. And this is one of the, I think, the most beautiful and radical reframes. Because we're constantly trying to get rid of things. It's like, ultimately, there is nothing that needs to be healed. It just needs to be felt. Yeah. We don't need, I came up with, I don't like slogans, but I heard myself say in one group, we don't need to heal, we need to feel. But it's, there's a, I really don't like slogans, but there's something really true in that.
Oh, thank you so
much.
I mean, I want to thank you so much that you really clarified us, because I bet that many people who are watching now this conversation, they can totally relate to it and also see that there is so much fear of really feeling the fear.
Of fear, exactly. Because it feels too much.
Yes.
And people are walking, every single person, for instance, is walking around, and within us, there are layers in us of what we might call unsafety. Fear as a visceral experience, even terror. And of course, we go around needing not to feel that. So we have a whole protection mechanism inside. But in the work that I've learned to do, as I say, we make it safe enough, and that's very important, and very precise enough to actually let the protection melt a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very delicate and very precise process.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also begin to understand, once we work with this kind of precision, we then understand how much of the time we're trying to be somewhere else. Even in very subtle, sometimes obviously, but often much more subtly.
Mm.
And the main mechanism that helps us do that is our thinking. Where instead of serving us as it should, our thinking takes control. Even you hear it when someone starts to contact an emotion and then they immediately want to explain it. And already we see, now you move away from the feeling because it's so difficult to stay. And that's a large part of the work.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to talk about more collective, we can really talk about the mechanism of that,
mm-hmm.
how that works when we do more collective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just want to kind of, I relate really a lot with what you shared, and and there are so many different ways how to go in the mind, explain it, to look, to find the origin, to look for stories, to analyze it, to look for solutions. All of that is really just bringing the energy up here.
Right.
And not supporting us properly and just being available for this movement which wants to happen. Yeah.
Exactly. And I also want to be careful not to make the mind like wrong, because actually Einstein said it very simply. He said the only question with the mind is whether it's your master or your servant. I think that's a beautiful simplicity.
Absolutely.
Because one of the ways we do, one of the key principles of practice in the work that I've learned to do, is we speak about reuniting word and energy. What does that mean? It means that if I'm working with someone and I say, or in a group, I say, what's happening right now? Tell me, how are you feeling? That someone learned, we have to practice over and over and over, is that I use my mind to articulate exactly what's happening inside me. Now, that sounds simple, but when we work, we realize that's exactly what we don't do normally. It's like something is happening inside me. I have physical sensations. I have emotional movements. I have a more subtle layers of my experience And then my mind starts to go away. And I talk about it, but I don't talk from it.
Mm-hmm.
And in one-to-one work or in group work, that's the biggest correction we can make. And the biggest gateway is when people learn to say, articulate truth, like with absolute authenticity and precision, what is happening. Because when that happens, it's like there's an alignment and then a big movement. Mm-hmm. And then we also realize it doesn't matter what's happening. There is nothing that's better than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, if someone looks and is able to say, I feel really numb right now. Like I don't have any emotion. I feel blocked. That's fantastic. We don't need to change that. We need to just feel that together. There's nowhere else to go. Because if we really sit with that, we're in a relational space, and then whatever needs to happen will happen. This is very important, because again, typically people say, I feel numb. What am I blocking? I want to feel something. No. Let's be fully with that. It's also a radical part of the work. There's nothing that needs changing. What we need is relating. I'm with you exactly as you are. And when we really create that space, there's a profound relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
So restoring the relational space is a profound part of healing work.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I recommend everyone look. Someone only showed this to me last week. If you go to YouTube and you write still face experiment, you see one of the most powerful 3 minutes of video you'll ever see. It's a baby and a mother. And at first, the mother is totally with the baby, and the baby is happy. And then they ask the mother to turn away and come back with no response. Within 1 minute, the baby is completely in distress. And that is an unbelievable, it's painful to watch. Because we see exactly what we're all carrying.
Mm.
And the relational space was broken in some way. And all of us are carrying that. But so when we restore relational space, I'm really, really with you. That's already a big healing. And same in a group. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I love it, because you are so beautifully pointing to the simplicity in a way, and yet I feel when you do surgery with a very sharp knife going really to where it makes sense to go with the energy and with the attention. And yeah, I feel it very strong, because this is how we can really make a change. Yeah,
exactly.
Without wanting anything to be different. And I want to go back a bit, because you mentioned, and I also experienced that is so important. You said we need a safe space. We need to be safe. And I just wonder what you would say, what helps us as individuals and also in a group field to build this safe container.
Right. It's a bit, I'm smiling because someone I'm working very deeply with wrote me this morning and said, Can you really articulate what it means to hold a safe space? You're asking me now as well. It's because it's a very, very
it's important. So important for what
so,
then is
right.
possible. Yeah.
It's. I mean, it's. I don't think we can say how important it is, because without that, nothing will happen.
Yes.
So, my experience, my understanding of holding a safe space, creating a safe space. So I'll talk about it. Let's say if that's my function, because I'm the leader, either in one-to-one or in group or in even in a very big group. What is it? What can I do as a leader that makes a safe space? It's a function, meaning I'm in that role. So what it means is that, first of all, I'm deeply resting in a very spacious level of being, presence. So my inner experience is very, very spacious. It's like, I have to do, it'll take me, it's okay, I need to unfold this in a few different ways, because it's so important also. In the Jewish mystical tradition, there's one beautiful metaphor where they say that if you open the page of book, any book, you have all the writing, you have all the black letters, but we also have the white page. And most of the time, we're completely fixated on the black letters. We walk around like, and we're in this small version of reality. Meditative practice opens the white page. So to hold a safe space, I need to be deeply rooted in the white page. Now, to be more precise, that is a condition of my nervous system. It's a visceral, embodied, rooted, settled nervous system. And that can only arise to the degree that I or anyone else have done enough in a healing work. Meaning, the more I work with the wounded, frozen parts of myself, the more my nervous system comes into this deep presence. And then the second part of it is very, very precise attunement. So I'm sitting in spacious presence, which is unconditional. This is the other important ingredient, essential ingredient. It's unconditional, meaning I'm ready to be with whatever arises. And then there is a precise attunement to whatever arises, meaning that you start, I may even feel in you before you feel yourself, because my nervous system is so opened and attuned. And that creates this, it's like a carpet of safety. And there's a very beautiful book on racism. It's another big topic I'm working with, by a black American psychotherapist called My Grandmother's Hands. It's a beautiful book. And he, at one point at the end, he said, I realized recently that the main reason people come into my therapy room is the condition of my nervous system. It's really beautiful. It's like they come in because it's a holding. And actually, it's that original holding that we all needed. Not only needed, that was like a primary biological need. So holding space means I, as the facilitator, am resting in that unconditional being presence and totally attuned. And we also, I mean, it's another topic, but those of us who, whether we're therapists or group leaders, it's very important to understand that we move into that as a function. And then we also move out of it, because otherwise people can get very confused. Because in that space, it's not the same exactly as I am in everyday life. And people, I used to get very confused, like, how come I can be so deep and wise when I'm working, and then I come out and suddenly I'm in a fight with my wife? What happened to all that wisdom? We need to understand. That's another conversation. But you know, in essence, did I explain it okay? You
yes,
get what I mean?
Yes.
It really is a holding. Really is a holding.
Absolutely.
And people feel it. And then their nervous system, because we're all walking around, and here maybe we can talk about more collective topics. It's like we're sitting on top of many frozen layers, but they're invisible to us. They're not available because we're like that. So when we're in the presence of a field of presence that allows our nervous system to start, then what is invisible and previously unfelt starts to become available. Mm-hmm. And then we're in a healing journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is what I kind of wanted also to mention, that in my experience is then when you provide a space like that, just as you described it so beautifully, this energy we couldn't process, or memories, or not felt feelings, they become so obvious then.
Right.
That often it can feel then very uncomfortable and starting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very, very important what you say. Because when we do group work like this, like I've just been doing in America, we agree and we develop the capacity to tolerate discomfort. It's so important what you just said.
Yes.
Because without that as well, nothing can happen. We need to agree together. Yes. But again, the leader needs to hold the space for that, so that people feel safe enough to tolerate even deep discomfort. Like someone begins to realize they're carrying a feeling of terror, not just fear, but terror. Whoa, we really need to feel safe enough to say yes to that.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, it's about saying yes to everything,
mm-hmm.
ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
But only to the degree that we feel safe enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yes to rage, yes to fear, yes to deep sadness, yes to all the energies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the amazing thing, I mean, what I just had in a really personal experience now more than a year ago, I wasn't really aware of a quality of terror in myself. It came up in a coaching session where my coach was able to provide a space, as you just described. And it was also fascinating because we met like we now meet on a screen. And there still it was possible to hold. And then I really had an terror in my system, that my whole system was shaking like that. And I was so surprised, because I thought, wow, I wasn't aware that this is part of me and is kind of hidden in myself. And yeah, and I mean, then kind of, I just had images from my grandmother, from war and stuff like that. And I mean, we can go into that, because it wasn't something, not an experience I would have in my life as a person. It was really something I would carry from my grandparents.
Exactly. No, clearly you experienced exactly what I'm talking about. And by the way, I do all my one-to-one work like this. It doesn't make any difference.
Yes.
It's very interesting. The capacity to feel And the tune is just as strong when we're like this. I do a lot of group work like this also. There is a difference. I mean, group work can still be very powerful on screen. But of course, it's better to be in person. Mm-hmm. But one-to-one, it doesn't make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
So yes, do you want to move now maybe into, because it seems you had a very strong experience of this, where you contacted layers in you. Everything, when we talk like that, it's like I think we often rest on the, everything is very personal, but then often we realize it's more than personal. As you just said, that you're carrying layers from your parents, your grandparents. And I think this is a relatively new topic. And I agree what you said, I think before you started recording, that it's really essential now. That we can't just go on working like you're healing. We have to realize we're in a much bigger fabric that needs healing, let's say, or needs some kind of correction.
Yeah. And nevertheless, kind of, it is expressed through individuals.
Only through individuals. That's really important, because when it can become a bypass when people say, oh, I want to work with collective healing. Yeah, but the only way we'll work with that, it's just what it's like. We have to see exactly what's happening in you. Otherwise we talk about it. But to get to the energy of it, the only place the energy of it first is what's happening in you.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can realize, okay, we're also sitting in a collective energy field here. But we can only feel that as it shows up here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And nevertheless, it's also my experience when we share the space together, when there are many, many people participating and witnessing and bringing their awareness to the process, it can just support, because it totally is intensifying as many, many lights are just shining onto it.
I completely agree with that. It's very important. And even more, I would say, I think the way you said it is perfect. I think it's also important to say that when we want to do more collective work, which means often that we turn towards real dark pain, we can only do that as a group. And for an individual, it's too much. It's like the pain of the world is too much for one person to face. But a group can build the capacity to turn more towards that, only in a group.
Mm-hmm.
That's another reason why I think this is group work is so important.
Mm-hmm. And Niklas, maybe you can just share your perspective and your understanding of, I mean, we agreed that both of us, we think that we are really in a time right now where we can't overlook that anymore. And can you give us your perspective in why is it so important, or what door can we open when we would go there and enter it as a group?
Right. So there are two questions there. So why is it so important? I think that's a very important question. Why is it so important? Because so to the extent that we are functioning, let's say, as a culture, on top of these, it's like layers that are frozen. To the extent that we're functioning like that, we are in a reduced intelligence, because life is intelligence, and everything that's frozen, therefore, is reducing that life intelligence. And we're trying to face more and more serious global problems with a reduced intelligence. So that's one essential reason. In order to have the kind of integrated left-right brain, intuition, intellect, higher insight, we have to have more intelligence flowing. And when a group, I mean, I see this many times, when a group starts to work with this, one of the things that happens after a while is that real insight comes in, like a download. That's like higher levels of insight and innovation. It feels like they're coming in because the group nervous system relaxes. So I think that's one of the essential reasons why it's so important in the face of what we're dealing with in the world.
And Niklas, what just came into my mind when I was listening to you, because I also love really this image of that there is something frozen. And the image what came is that under this frozen surface, there is a whole ocean, there is life, there is flow. And when Right. we are not able to access this ocean and this flow, we also feel really we are in a feeling of lack, of less vitality, of less inspiration, of less nourishment, of less joy, right. kind of all of the good things in life. We
right.
miss it and we try to get it from somewhere
right.
above this frozen surface.
Exactly. I'm smiling just because you're saying things we've been working with so directly in the last 2 weeks. And one thing word you used, it's exactly the right word, is that we live in a consciousness of scarcity. The more there is frozen energy, the more we experience life as scarcity. There's not enough. And as you say, we try to look as if we can fill that. But the more a group or an individual comes more home, life is not scarce anymore. And that's a really, really big correction. I'm not coming from lack anymore. Actually, I feel very full, and it's got nothing to do with what I have or don't have. It's an inner belonging, let's say. A feeling of being at home more and more. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then the other, you also, just to remember, you asked about the gateways, right? How do we do that in a group? Well, first of all, yeah, because I had even 3 days ago a very strong experience with this, but then also larger groups in the last year or two where I was a participant, not a leader. So, okay, let's talk about the large groups also because you're speaking from Germany. So, the large group processes I've been involved in, where I was a participant, that were being held by the person I've been training with intensively in the last 5 years, where we would meet for 4 or 5 days, and at a certain World War II. And this would be a group of 200.
Because there was just a short internet interruption.
Okay.
So could you just
this would be a large group of probably around 200 Germans. And in this case, maybe 20 to 30 who are Jewish. My father was Jewish, so technically I'm half Jewish because it goes through the mother. So we would be together for 3-4 days, and it would be agreed that we were going to turn towards the topic of the war and the Holocaust. So how do we do that? In essence, we do it exactly through what we've been saying, that the leader announces that, and maybe also then kind of feeds in questions to, but they're questions that are coming into what's happening in you. And to make it as simple as possible, we start to work sometimes in groups of 3 or 4 to, in order that each person can start to contact, how is this sitting in me? And then as it develops, we just go deeper and deeper, often then in the whole group. But what's very interesting is that the first thing that happens, and it can even be almost a whole day, is a huge tiredness and numbness. It's like everyone is sitting there like, I really want to go and sleep. But what's important is that we agree to witness that. We agree to stay with the discomfort of that. And that's where the leader is so important. That he or she is saying, let's notice this. Let's just talk, turn to the person next to you. Tell them exactly how you feel. So we stay with that, because then we understand that that's exactly what's in the energy field we're living in. That we're living on top of this whole layer of numbness. And if we agree to stay with it, then little by little, some of the ocean also starts to, but then we start to get in, of course, to very, very, very painful feelings from both sides. And I mean, it really does get intense, as you can imagine. But we make, again, an unconditional space where what is inside can start to be spoken, where word and energy are one, so people speak from their experience. And that's the basic process, because as that starts to happen, you really feel, we're touching a very collective energy field here. And each person who speaks with truth is contributing to that energy field starting to move. Of course, this also takes place, it's all very, very important, this takes place within a context where there is also very strong spiritual practice. You can't do this work just on a psychological level. And what does spiritual practice mean? It means I have a very strong meditation practice that gives me access to higher dimensions. So at the end of a day like this, where a huge emotion has been expressed. I mean, real, like, including terror, hatred, murderous impulse. I mean, all of it. At the end of a day like that, we sit together and we do very strong meditative practice, which you can often feel is like washing the space as well. And without that, it's not possible to do this work. That's a resource. It's a key resource.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To give a more, I'll give one more, like 2 or 3 days ago in New York, and we were a group of 15, a much smaller group. But this is a group who've been working together now nearly a year. When I'm in New York, I lead it in person. When I'm not, they meet together online with, two of them facilitate the work. So I wanted, because it's a big topic for me, I wanted to open the topic of the wounding of women. The wounding of women, because I think that's one of the biggest locks in our culture. that women in our culture, Western culture, let's say, although obviously we could talk about others, but in our so-called advanced Western world, there is no place for real women's power and for women's wisdom. There is no place for that. Our culture doesn't make a place because it's a hyper-masculine culture. And so I wanted to, the first day we talked about this and it was clearly a big topic. And the second day, this is where there is an intention. So I said at the beginning of the day, let's come back to this topic. And then I spoke in a way that invited the women in the group to feel either their rage or their grief or their shame or their sense of being muted, but to feel it viscerally, not just to think about it. And then after a certain, it's like you heat the space. Energetically, it's like heating the space. And then we open the space, and then this could start to be spoken. And one or two women in particular went through a real kind of big energetic release as well, like shaking. And then at one point, it was amazing because one of the men said, I just want to share with you that when that was happening, I started to feel fear and then it became terror. And he said, but I've been sitting with this and now I just feel like so open and grounded. And at that point, something really important happened because we understood together that ultimately, I have to be very careful because it's such an important topic, that when the feminine stands in full power and is met by the masculine in full power, there is more and more energy. They don't conflict in any way at all. In fact, there's such a mutuality. It was like, and in that moment, we could also feel it's like we're touching such a huge mechanism here in our culture. Okay, it's happening between two people in one room, but it's like energetically we're touching the fabric of it was really an amazing kind of hour or something, or however long this took. And it's like you're rewriting something in that moment. It's like we're living in this massive contract in our culture. And it's so normalized, we don't even realize it because we have all the Me Too movement, which on the one hand is super important, and on the other hand goes nowhere near this real suppression. In my perception anyway. So by touching it so directly, it feels like we're rewriting, not just in the room, but we're touching a fabric. Does it make sense?
Absolutely.
It's difficult to explain it because it's so kind of experiential, but I'm giving some sense.
No, I mean, I can totally follow you because I had also experience, for example, in sexuality with my partner. We would sometime come to places where we would just be able to be present with the space between us and the pain and not understanding and not knowing, and we're able to not take it personal or make something wrong, then we could really experience that what we are now meeting is an issue which is so much bigger than the two of you, of us in the room. Right. It's a collective male and female issue coming
exactly
together.
Right.
And what I also got when you were just sharing is that we also, I mean, I don't want to generalize it, but often we lack so much of real intimacy. And what you just shared is for me so important, because real intimacy is only possible and when we are really able to meet and to be there together in this depth, in the pain and whatever is there. And there are so many other ways how people try to address that lack, which doesn't make sense. So, yeah.
No, I feel very touched by how you speak about intimacy, because it's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
When we're willing to be naked with what's happening and in relationship, that's, I think, intimacy. Mm-hmm. And people think intimacy is about, oh, I feel good, I feel loving towards you. No.
Sometimes.
But intimacy is exactly how you described it. I will tell you about what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
You tell me what you're feeling and we'll feel each other.
Yeah. And what I also experienced, that often really in the relationship, before such an issue comes to the surface, it can feel quite uncomfortable for a while. And then you need to make space and to kind of, create a safe environment and really be willing to look at it. And my experience is that always when we were able to go there together, the relationship comes to another level. And I just sense that this is not just something which is a valuable in a partnership. It's also relevant in groups, in communities, in the whole society, to come there also to other levels.
Totally. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
And in a way, exactly how you describe it in the intimacy of the one-to-one. That's like the microcosm of what needs to happen. I 100% agree with you. And that's my commitment too, I feel a kind of movement towards working with bigger and bigger groups who can do this together.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need to do that. We need to build groups, cultures together, cultures of real presence. That are a correction. It's like we live in a culture of absence most of the time, and we normalize that.
Yeah.
So I have a very deep commitment to building cultures of presence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And where we agree to feel whatever we're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And where we're also held by this higher spiritual practice as well.
Absolutely. I mean, in my experience, it's not possible without it.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's one of the most important integrations now between psychological work and spiritual work. One without the other is really not enough.
Mm-hmm.
You either have spiritual people who can't really function properly, or you have therapeutic people who get lost in the labyrinth of therapeutic work.
Yeah, and in my understanding, I mean, really living a spiritual life means that spirit meets everything in matter.
Exactly.
This is really coming in. So maybe the real understanding of Tantra is this, where light goes into the matter in the deepest, densest, uncomfortable places. This is all other things. Maybe it's a starting point somewhere, but when you practice really serious and deep enough, you will see that you can't avoid that. And actually it's attracting, because then it really makes, spirit and life really comes into communion.
Exactly. as we said at the beginning, then light comes right down into matter. And that takes place in the core of our body, the core of our nervous system. In a way, one might even say, I don't, obviously it's a kind of speculation, but that's why we incarnate. Mm. Otherwise we would have just stayed up there. But it seems that our journey, not only that, it's also very clear, I think, that ultimately energy can only be transformed and transmuted through our bodies. So we have to, like you say, we have to come right down and feel what's happening here. So it's almost like our bodies are built to be the transmuters of energy. And I think on a metaphysical level, that's extraordinary.
Yeah. Wow, Niklas, enjoy our conversation, because I really see that we are interested in a very similar way in our kind of understanding. And I love the precision of how you really address and name things. I'm always a bit, it's a bit a pity that my English isn't that good that I can choose this right words, but I do my very best. And on a feeling and experience level, I'm totally with you.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And Niklas, I mean, time is really passing so fast.
Right. Right.
At the end of our time together, but I want to give you the opportunity, if there is anything you want to bring to our audience, to the attention of our audience, which might happen at the end of the year, where people mm-hmm. could maybe join your program mm-hmm. or whatever. I'm very happy to give you this opportunity.
No, thank you very much, Maria. First of all, let me say what a deep pleasure it's been to speak, but also to relate with you in this way. I feel it in my whole mm-hmm. system, so thank you. Yes, there's a lot, it's like I'm in a lot of movement and waves. So there are two things in the autumn, at least. And everything will be on my website, so I'll be happy if we just announce niklasyanni.com. Two things for sure, but there will be more. One of the things I'm just finished again is a training online for people who want to do transformational coaching. And that is a lot of what we've been talking about. And we just have a fantastic course online, live. It's live classes. So there will be another one of those in the autumn. And then also December, the first weekend in December, I've booked a beautiful large space in London where I want to do a weekend of collective trauma work. So that will be announced on my website as well. And it would be great if people from Europe will come. I probably will work with the masculine and the feminine topic and really have a big space to do that together. And then I'm also thinking more and more about other ways of building, as we said, cultures of presence. So it will all be on my website. Which was designed by an amazing German woman, actually. She did an incredible job. So, yeah. So thank you.
Anything else you want to share to close the space, and or what you want to give in with a sentence or two to our listeners and viewers?
I think mainly that we keep remembering how essential it is to become more and more embodied. That's one of the biggest corrections of all. That the more we come deeply home in our bodies, the more gateways open. We need to stop thinking about all of this, and we need to embody this more and more and more. And I think even in the way we've been speaking, this be for me been a very embodied experience, and hopefully that's also felt by people who are maybe watching this. So my invitation to anyone watching would be just to take a few minutes after we finish and to close your eyes and just bring your awareness fully into what's happening in your body. So thank you again.
I thank you, and I hope this was not our last conversation, because
I'm sure it won't be.
Have more to share.
Yes.
All the best to you and to all programs, and thank you for your sincere and yet light and comprehensive understanding of spirituality, really wanting to be embodied. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thanks a lot. And bye for now.
Bye.